Welcome back, everybody. Here we are 1 week to the day from Halloween, everybody's favorite holiday. And you are here with No Ship Network tonight to take you back to Elk Grove, Michigan for Season 2, Episode 4 of the Starz television series, Ash vs. Evil Dead, the Deadite Bites podcast. It's time. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/noship. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And since Steve mentioned that it's Halloween next week, I recommend that you check out The Halloween Tree. There's two different versions on Audible you can try. There's one that's dramatized. I think that would be fun. And that's written by Ray Bradbury. And Ray Bradbury is an awesome story writer, so you can't go wrong there.
Alternate choice, a good one, would be Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Oh, nice.
This episode was directed by Michael Bassett, written by Ivan Raimi, and of course produced by the Three Stooges, Raimi, Tappert, and Campbell.
Did you say Ivan Raimi?
Yes, Ivan Raimi.
I didn't know Sam. Ivan Raimi.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's been writing and working along with Sam Raimi since Evil Dead days.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, before we get into the recap, anybody got some thoughts on this one?
Okay, so I loved it, of course. I'd probably give it like a 9.5. Just because I feel like I gotta throw these out there every now and then. It can't be tens every time, you know. People might stop listening if I do that. But 9.5, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, there was a lot of everything you want. Random eyeballs and grills, you know. It was good. It seemed a little bit more of a serious episode. You know, there wasn't as many yucks for me, but it's still fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. It was a more serious episode, and the stuff that made me laugh was not, I don't think, supposed to be funny in some areas. But I was really grossed out by Ash trying to put his dad's brain back into his head. That was, for whatever reason, gave me more chills than the morgue.
Yeah, it was foul. Scene.
I don't like rating episodes anyway in general, just because I feel like it's really hard to put a number on something and have that actually mean what you feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, it's continuing to keep the pace of what you expect with Ash vs. Evil Dead. So I'm happy and I enjoy it. And I watched it 3 times and it was enjoyable and made me laugh, you know, every single time I watched it.
Yeah, this episode, I agree with both of you. This episode had a little bit more of the seriousness running through the horror gags and the comedy and stuff like that. But for a good reason, because we're tying up some storylines here. You know, if you think about it, we now have a unified villain for everybody to fight in the form of Ball. We've gotten rid of the Necronomicon. It's a non-player at this point, not to say that it probably won't come back, because it probably will.
Oh, shit, I didn't even think about that.
You've got Ruby killing off the creepy kids. So, and then Ash's dad is dead and he's kind of made peace with that whole thing. So and Pablo is no longer tied to the book as well. So you sort of wrap up some threads that were thrown out there at the end of last season and the beginning of this season. And we can kind of move into the second phase of Season 2. And it also solidifies Ruby as a member of the quote unquote good guys of the cast.
The Scooby gang.
Yeah, you think?
Maybe solidifies is too strong of a word. Maybe there's going to be something that comes. There's probably going to be something that comes along that blows
that theory
out of the water.
Well, she kind of explains it, because she even says that it seems like the one thing that she's actually afraid of is him, because she's like, you don't have a choice not to be seduced by this guy.
Right.
Which, right. What's he going to look like? Is it going to be like another Ash just to be funny? Or, I mean, there's no
He
telling.
Looks pretty cool, actually. We saw the next time on. He looks pretty cool.
Sweet. So it's, yeah, I think she's a part of the Scooby gang until he's gone. And then she'll go back to being Ruby. You know, I don't think she'd ever be a permanent fixture.
Yeah. She's always going to be that wild card.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a fun transition to see her go from being like, okay, this is the villain that they have to fight, to, all right, now she's on our side. And there's a very Buffy-esque feel to that, mm-hmm. you know, or Farscape-y kind of feel, where you take like a big bad villain and you switch him over to the good guys team, because not because they like her so much, but because she has to be there with him.
So you don't think Pablo's tied to the book anymore?
I think that's what the book was throwing in his face, was literally throwing on his face, was talking about, like, you and I are intertwined by, you know, or we're, what did you, I forgot the exact words that the book used, but said that, you know, we're kind of bound together, ha ha ha, book joke, mm-hmm. you know, by an unimaginable force. And he's talking about the forces either the book itself or the forces behind it that created it or whatever have you. And I think he's trying to goad Pablo into doing what
he wanted,
and he got what he wanted. It's like, say the word, throw the book away, we can separate forever. So I think Pablo is done with that. And that, I think this episode was the capstone on that. Could be wrong, but now we call that
the Jar Jar Binks.
The Jar Jar Binks?
Yeah, because he does the same thing in episode 3. Somebody's got to do it, Jar Jar. Just go ahead and give me all the power. Okay.
Somebody's got to be the scapegoat.
I'll take it.
Because then when it all goes back in history, they're going to be like, oh, that makes sense why it happened. It was Jar Jar.
Yep. He started the Grand Army of the Republic.
Darth
Dumbass.
Binks.
We start the episode with Ash lamenting the time wasted with bitterness and hatred that he's never going to get back watching his dead dad. And this is pretty touching. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is a heartwarming moment. He's sad about the fact that, like, everybody would be, you know what I mean? You just made up with any member of your family who you've had this acrimony with, and then all of a sudden, blammo. But what he didn't have to do was try to scoop his brains back into his head. That's just...
Those were really good brains, too. I mean, they were jiggly and gooey. It was fun.
They were.
Apparently, they had four different sets of brains floating around the workshop before they settled on that one, because they wanted it to be extra squishy and lifelike and gooey.
I mean, would you be mad if somebody threw brain like that, one of those brains at you, and it got shit all over you? I think I would be okay with it.
What? I think I would be mad.
See, if you're goofing off in like an art studio and you throw gooey brains at someone, I'd be fine with it.
As long as it's not real brains.
Oh, not a real brain.
Yeah. No, okay, like the fake brains.
I don't think you qualified that.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
We weren't sure where you were going with that.
Yeah, no, like in the actual art studio itself.
All right, so before we get into the recap, let's do our Metal Mic quote of the week. Em, you go first.
I'm doing it. I'm hard, Dad. I'm hard. That's my...
I forgot about that one. That's good.
I'm going with Ash. Asbestos in the polls. Chicks were getting rashes on their hoochie macooters.
Hoochie macooters. Genius.
That's a first for me.
Yeah, that is a first. I think. Have you heard that one before?
No, coochie macooters.
Hoochie macooters. That's three strikes right there. You got this many years of experience with, you know, different names for the female genitalia, and no one's heard that one. So they either made it up or it's a Michigan thing that you just don't
know
about.
It's not a Michigan thing.
He should have just said pussy. It's all in the public news anyway. You know, it's not like the SEC's going to bleep you for it.
You can say it on ABC Nightly News.
Right.
Now.
Exactly. I feel bad that the Delta's dead.
Is it? Is it,
he's going to bring it back.
Fuck, I hope so, but it might not be for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going to have to be a lot of work to go on in there. So Pablo has found his sunshine sack and is done letting fate choose for him. He comes up and he's like, you know, he's telling El Jefe he's going to grab the bull by the horns, and he's sick of letting fate decide for him. He's a new man. Great. Good. So, of course, just watching his dad get hit by a car and getting his brain splattered everywhere, Ash is possibly a little bit on the cynical side. And he's a bit distracted.
Says,
yeah. He's like, Pablo, my advice to you, think of your life as a good time, not a long time. So Pablo says, no, thank you. And Ash says, you're welcome.
Genius. Now, something bothered me right after this, because they leave. He goes and finds a car and all that. Neither of them thought about where Kelly was. She didn't tell him that she left. They just kind of went off on their own and didn't even worry about Kelly and Ruby. They just split during the party. They were like, we can go now while everybody's busy. And it's like, well, fuck. The whole episode, I imagine, I was like, no one's worried about Kelly?
But like I said earlier, I think Ash is probably really distracted. And then you got the Delta showing up all possessed. There's really no time.
That's true.
To wonder. And maybe, you know, it really wasn't. I mean, maybe it's as much time as it took to watch that show. It's really only about a half hour.
That's true.
They should start wondering next episode.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they'll be wondering by the end of it, because they're going to go back to the bar and they're going to be like, where the hell is Kelly and Ruby? You know, but like at this point, when he's talking about the only people who love him or that he loves in the world are Pablo, Kelly, and Eli, and well, that's just about it. That would have been his only opportunity
to go.
And speaking of Kelly, where is she? You know, yeah, where are either of these people?
Is Eli in the Airstream?
Last time we saw him was in
Jacksonville.
Back in Jacksonville.
I think he's in Jacksonville enjoying the sun and fun and guns.
Holding down the fort.
Fuck.
So we have a really good time with some gore effects here as Ash tries to scoop the brains back into the skull. And he asks Pablo, he says, Pablo, you don't see another eyeball around here, do you? And that's when the Delta shows up. And this scene was really awesome because Pablo goes over to it thinking he's going to grab the proverbial bull by the horns. And he just gets like, it's almost like the seatbelts were tentacles that just reached out of this monster and grabbed him in. So now he's stuck in there with Lacey too. And so now the Delta is slowly getting ready to hunt down Ash, and then it revs up. He jumps out of the way, and then we just get the coup de grace where he runs right over Brock and splashes the blood for the opening sequence.
It's like, ugh.
I noticed the music in this one was really good because you have Slade doing Come On, Feel the Noise, and then you've got Rush doing, I'm not sure what the song is called. I think it's The Great White North. And, you know, I had never really listened to the Slade version all that much, but Quiet Riot does a great job of capturing how the vocals sound, you know, because there's little segments of it where you really can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. Overall, they're very differently recorded songs, but I just thought I'd throw that in there, a little music stuff for you. So Ash tracks down Chet, who wants to take him to the titty bar Mammary Lane. I didn't get this.
Terrible name.
I didn't get this on the first view because I didn't watch it with closed captioning. It wasn't until the second viewing and I was just like, oh, okay, Mammary Lane.
Oh, it was genius.
Like,
makes me want to open up one.
The place is good lighting, apparently.
This is why I don't like to be called ma'am, because it comes from the word mammary. So you're just like, hey, boob, or ma'am, boob, can I have some of that?
Oh, I never thought of that.
Don't think of him saying boo.
Sir,
think of him saying
sire.
Well, you get a better reaction out of people anyway when you use miss, even if they're really old, because they're like, oh, miss. It's like, yes, miss. How much is this?
I couldn't say, miss. So Ash needs a ride and convinces Chet to let him drive in his gremlin. This is a gremlin. I looked it up and I was looking at some other people thought it might be this car or that car. Somebody even came up with like, well, maybe this is a Vega station wagon.
No, it was an early gremlin.
It's a gremlin. You can tell by the side gills, I guess, for lack of a better term, towards the back window.
Yeah, it's a 70s gremlin, right?
This thing is a rust bucket. I mean, it's got to be being held together with duct tape. So apparently Chet didn't share, you know, the same vocational school experiences that Ashley Williams did in keeping his car, you know, in good working order.
Well, I mean, you know, Ash is a hands-on kind of guy. Like, really hands-on.
It's running.
Yeah, it's running, yeah.
Fuck, I mean, from a car from the 70s that's still running today, I think he's had to have done something.
And some gremlins actually had V8s in them, so those little cars would move.
A gremlin had a V8 in it?
Yeah, there were models with V8s. I know my friend's dad in South Florida is actually restoring a gremlin and has a V8 in it.
That's
mean.
Unsafe.
I mean, it's his dad will drive around. It's actually near Tampa in Florida, you know, he figures. And he'll find those little kids in, like, Hondas and stuff and that want to race. Those little kit cars with, the number 10 cans on the exhaust. And he'll race them and kill them, dude. Kill them in a gremlin. And this thing is the ugliest thing you've ever seen. His son made him put a roll bar in it because of how fast it is. I was like, yes, I want to drive it.
Man, I could see having a V8 in a Nova, an old school Nova. But, I mean, because that would look badass going down the road. But a gremlin? I guess the fun factor of just smoking somebody in a race when they're thinking, oh, look at this little rust bucket.
It's a gremlin. But see, that's the way that some of those old cars were. You know, they had the engine space for it. And then it's a little lighter. Now, not the same model gremlin as that one. A little later model. It had a little more ass to it.
All right, so Chet agrees because, hey, you know, if Ash is driving, he can keep pounding brewskis and stay hydrated.
Yeah, that's what I was. I can stay hydrated. It was like, alcoholic. No, I'm kidding.
It's a win-win.
You can tell it's his best friend. That's definitely Ash's best friend.
Yeah, they think alike. So Pablo and Lacey are being taken for a joyride in the possessed Delta, and the two make their introductions and sparks fly from under the car. Not between the two of them. She doesn't want to have anything to do with it.
When she says her name, that made me laugh every single time. Because she's all, Lacey! Like, she's freaking out, you know. She screams like a Nazgul, practically.
Well, he's all kind of calm, you know, like, what's your name? Fuck you, man.
Well, this chick's seeing her life flash before her eyes. And for Pablo, this is Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, he's like, all right, what's going on here?
No, he's scared. But I think she, you know, her reaction's appropriate. And I think actually the actress does a great job. But it just makes me laugh every time I
heard you laugh. That, like, we were sitting together watching it the first time. And then the second and third time you watched it, I heard you in the other room. And she's like, Lacey! Just bust out laughing. So Chet is understandably wondering why Ash has a shotgun and a chainsaw in the backseat of his Gremlin. So this is a cool scene because of the way they bounce back and forth between the two of them while they're talking. And I feel like Ted Raimi is channeling Joxer the Mighty right here.
Yeah,
that's totally his Joxer face, his Joxer voice, everything. And, you know, but Ash is coming up with some cool answers on the fly. And he's like, well, you know, it's for ice sculptures. What's a shotgun for? For when people don't want to pay for the ice sculptures. So this is the scene where My Metal Might quote of the week comes out, because they go right past Memory Lane and Chet tries to grab the wheel and he's like, no, they had to close the place down because of asbestos. He's like, oh man, that's a shame. You know, when you get to that point where you're so drunk that you believe anything that anybody says to you, and you're just like, oh, is that happening? not a good place. Such a great place to be then, not such a good place to be the next morning. We all know about that. So Kelly and Ruby pull up to the Airstream in Ruby's car, which I didn't know she still had it, but I guess she had to get around, you know, somehow, some way. And they raid the arsenal that is underneath Ash's fold-up bed, which is pretty damn impressive. And so, you know, Ruby says so. She's like, this is pretty impressive. She's like, yeah, we didn't set out to have an arsenal, but you know what they say, when in Jacksonville. Which, nice little joke for all of the NRA carrying members down here in the South. Ha-ha.
Gun shows.
Very funny.
All about gun shows.
I thought they had gotten the guns from the compound in season one.
Yeah, the militants.
The militia compound.
Yeah, but they lost a lot, though. You know what I mean? Because didn't they have to leave that place on the fly to go to the cabin?
Yeah, that's true. Maybe they weren't. They weren't really organized with getting everything that they needed.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot of hardware. I mean, some of that stuff is military grade.
Look at what happened around here recently. A friend of mine got married. This is actually relevant, so it should stay in the pod. A friend of mine got married north of us, right? And in the same place she got married a month ago, these police officers decided to have their wedding up there and had the wedding photos where they are all holding AR-15s, fully automatic AR-15s, because they're cops. They're allowed to have these weapons. Well, right. The guy who was getting married decided to put him in the back of his car and didn't lock the doors, and someone stole it. So, Florida. Florida, you know, it's ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so, Sarah Connor's not impressed with their little stash there, though.
Yeah, right?
Hers was way better down in Mexico.
Yeah, Sarah Connor shouldn't be impressed with that, because she can do more chin-ups than any of them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right?
So I like this scene because we get a little bit more information about Ball and how seductive he is and how irresistible he is and how Ruby didn't pick him, he picked her.
Yeah.
So, you know, but while they're having this conversation, they're pointing said military-grade automatic weapons at each other. Like, when you trail off like that, I don't trust you because it makes me think you're hiding something. And so Ruby's doing the same thing right back to her.
Well, good for Kelly for thinking this through. I was worried she was just going to be like, okay, Ruby, where do you want to go next? I like it that she's like super tough, staying focused and questioning her instead of not asking any of these questions like Ash usually does.
Well, I'm curious about it all because she's talking about Ball being manipulative and seductive in a way where he gets into your psyche. And I feel like that's happening to Kelly, because you had the child of Ruby and Ball basically say something to her when in the first episode, right? About her being, or the, I don't remember. No, it was herself when she fought herself.
Right.
That's what said, you know, you're the leader, whatever. And then Ruby says the same thing to her last episode when they meet outside. So to me, that's kind of along the manipulation, seductive type of track that probably Ball was taking. So I don't totally buy that Lucy Lawless is not completely under his heel. I think she's still in union with him.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. I could see it.
So what do you guys make of Kelly's, she's skeptical, she puts up the gun and she's like, this makes me not want to trust you. And then when things are smoothed out, she's like, you know, you only think that because you've been fighting this person for thousands of years without any help, but I'm on your team now. I've got your back. Let's go kill your creepy kids kind of thing. It's almost like she's just been around Pablo and Ash for so long and away from her family, who's now unfortunately dead, that she just wants to bond with somebody who she could possibly see as a mother figure.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. You know, like, I feel like it's a little bit of a stretch. I think she's just kind of been, I look at her as like she's been on training with Ash. And now she's kind of leveled up and she's ready to kind of go out on her own and make her own decisions because she's seen Ash fuck it up constantly.
She is ready to get out there and fight. You're right. Mm-hmm.
That's maybe the way, like an apprentice Deadeye hunter.
So maybe she's showing leadership skills by trying to bond with that person and saying, okay, we're about to go into battle. We have to be this strong unit. I've got your back.
Yeah, she's just kind of saying, yeah, exactly. You want to go in as a team and not pointing the gun at each other. So she's like, all right, let's go and do this.
Okay, I can go with that.
Yeah.
So the Necronomicon makes his presence known from the back seat, and it starts to taunt Pablo, telling him that their destinies are bound together by the most powerful force imaginable. Still like that book joke. Pablo looks into the visor mirror and sees his Necronomicon face and then crashes the car. So this is what this whole thing was, just a pretext to get Pablo into this alternate dimension headspace, mm-hmm. where he can see all this, whatever's happening to him, and experience what's going on. So we have a little bit to talk about here that's pretty interesting. So the Delta crashes and Pablo has been impaled by a street sign pole.
Brutal.
You're not coming back from that.
No, you know, that's, man.
The size of the hole that was left in the body, you'd probably be instantly dead from where that was placed. But then after Ash comes over and tries to pull it out one way and it doesn't work, and then he pulls it out the other way, I mean, you talk about sucking wounds. I mean, that's
and the actor did an amazing job selling it. I mean, he did a really good job.
Now, when you first see him, when he wakes up with the blood coming out of his mouth and everything, and the way the camera's angled at him, and I think the track the blood was taking down the side of his face looked almost distorted to me. Like, I thought, mm-hmm. like, his jaw got broken or something.
It did look like that, like it was distended out. And yeah. Because it was the way that it was, like, this thick ichor-looking blood coming.
Yeah.
So I'll just describe the scene real quick about what happens, and then we'll go into any theories that we might have about this. So Ash tries to pull it out, and he succeeds, leaving a gaping hole in his chest. And this is where I was certain that we were having a vision, because there's no way that you'd be able to survive that. He would be dead instantly. Mm-hmm. So Ash says, look, I got this taken care of. You just need to rest. You need to sleep. So I'm going to put you in the trunk of the Delta, because that's where you need to go. Fuck. And Pablo's fighting him on it. Then he looks up at Ash, and Ash looks, it's the eyes. I watched mm-hmm. it. I don't know how many times.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out what had changed.
The eyes and the mouth.
It was the eyes, and they didn't make him look like possessed Ash in the cabin from, you know, movie 2 or anything like that. They went for a more subtle look, and it's almost a little bit scarier because it's the same Ash that you know and love, but he looks alien and different.
It was for like a second too, because it's like, did I just see that?
Yeah, your brain doesn't quite put its finger on like what changed. You have to really take it apart mm-hmm. to see, because it's so fast.
It reminds me of like David Lynch when we saw Lost Highway, when he was looking at his wife in the bed and then she had the face of the mystery man superimposed over her face.
That's good. It's disturbing. I agree.
Yeah.
Oof. I think it's Ball's face.
So Ash tells Pablo to go to sleep in the trunk of the Delta, and Ash slams the trunk and he says, see you on the other side, amigo. And so Pablo awakes from his vision / waking dream, and, you know, he's still alive and he's still in the Delta. So given what we know at the end of the episode with the Necronomicon being thrown into the hell dimension
within
in
the trunk,
what importance do we think this has?
Well, I thought about it, and I think that that's why I don't think he's severed from a tie with the book. I think he's still connected, and I think Ball needed to have like a two front. Like, he needed in this alternate reality, because since Pablo is connected to the book, he needed to go into the trunk. And then in our world, the book also had to. So it was like, in order for Ball's magic to work, to be released from that alternate dimension, I think he had to have cast a spell in his reality as well as our reality.
Okay,
and that's how it was done.
So Pablo, carrying a piece of the Necronomicon with him at all times, pretty much, gets into the trunk. So that part of him gets there, and then the literal book gets thrown in at the end, completing the...
Well, I have a little bit of a different twist on that. I think Pablo isn't connected to the book. I think because of the spell that was used, he's connected to Ball. Because Ball's been sending him these visions consistently from the beginning of the season, right? So how mm-hmm. she says that he can manipulate you, he's seductive, everything else. I think this has all been one long, elaborate. When Ruby cast that spell to bring her kids might have been with Ball, or because she's the mother, maybe by putting the mask on his face like that kind of made him the father, you know what I mean? Just for a second, which would have been Ball. So I think it's all been one long, seductive, elaborate trap to get Pablo to do it, just like you said earlier. And the trunk, I think, was just kind of like a subtle hint of, well, look, you went into the trunk to be safe or whatever. It's just him seducing him to finally at the end go, look, you have to do this and you won't be connected, which he might always be connected because it's not. I think he's connected to Ball. I really do. I think all that was just one long, elaborate ruse to get him to do what he wants.
So you think he created like a premonition dream
in all order of them,
for him
yeah.
to be more likely to follow through with the act of
yeah.
putting the book in there? And do you think, so then is the consciousness behind the Necronomicon, is that Ball? Like who's speaking through the book?
I think he's using the book as a portal. It's been used as a portal for Ash and other things just in the magic itself. So yeah, I think he's using it as a portal. Like when the face animates, that's actually not Ball's actual face, but Ball using it to communicate. Mm-hmm. Which would be why the kids, and it, you can use it as a weapon because it has a super demon's power pushing through it.
Well, it's a tool. The book is a tool. So mm-hmm. whoever's using it can do whatever they need to. Because remember, Spinach yeah. Chin was able to send Ash back. So there's benevolence in there as well. Mm-hmm. It's a mixed bag of things.
For sure.
So I don't know. Like Ball might have been able to channel his voice through the book and get Pablo tricked into doing it.
Yeah.
But the book might have realized that it needs to, maybe the book wants to resurrect Ball. I don't know. It's all up in the air. I do believe that the book being a tool and separate from any entity that wants to mm-hmm. use it, it wants to get back home. It wants to go back to its hell dimension. That just happened to be fortuitous to Ball. But I do think now that it's gone, the tie's been severed.
See, I don't think it's gone. I think Ball's going to bring it back with him. You know what I mean? I think him... Not like I don't think the book has a conscience. I think all that was Ball using it on the opposite end. You know what I mean? Like knowing his own spells to use the book itself. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's used for whoever has the book can do anything they want. You know what I mean? That's within the book's power. So I think Ball was just using it that way. I don't think, I mean, can you have Ash first Evil Dead without the Necronomicon? Are they going to have to go to hell to get it? Or does he bring it with him?
The a lot of the Necronomicon lore that we've gotten has actually come from the series mm-hmm. because you get a good little bit at the beginning of Evil Dead 2 where it says that it was written in a certain time and it was inked in human yeah. blood, and then in the year 13 something it disappears and blah blah blah. Well, it's used to either open up the Pandora's box or try to shut it again. Mm-hmm. But what happens in the interim is just Ash basically getting fucked by all of the things that come through because of the book's power. So I think the book could actually take a hiatus from the series for a little while now that we have Ball on the scene.
Yeah,
as long as we can stretch him out for the rest of the season as being the quote-unquote like bad guy, and then that would work and you wouldn't need the book. Or the book could then almost take the Ruby route and become a benevolent force that they have to go track down to put this genie back in the bottle.
Oh, I would love it if they went to hell. I would love to see their version of hell.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
it would be glorious.
It'll be the next portal we see Ash get sucked into.
Oh, it would be glorious.
So anything else you guys wanted to say about that?
Mm-hmm. No.
All right. Ash and Chet catch up with the Delta, and Ash starts taking shotgun blasts at it. So Ash is busting out with some totally sweet road warrior moves here. You know what I mean? Just coming up around the hood of the car and everything. That's what it reminded me of, the Mel Gibson road warrior.
Mm-hmm. It was funny when he mashed Chet's face with his boot.
Yeah.
or Three Stooges humor. Gotta love it. They're getting close, and he could probably actually start doing some damage, but Chet's had enough, and he pulls the parking brake, and then the Delta speeds away. So this is, he's like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you firing at these two kids in the Delta? So Ash kind of has to spill the beans, come clean about what it is, and he gives him the short, abbreviated version. Well, That's redundant. He gives him the abbreviated version of what the fuck is going on. And wouldn't you know it, instead of not believing him, Chet, the true friend that he is, says, yep, I'm on board. Let's kill some goddamn demons. You know, the first person probably ever in this whole universe to not be skeptical, to not be scared, to not be like, oh, God, but to just be like, all right, let's do it then. And so Ash does the right thing, though. He says, no, this isn't your fight. You know, and he talks about how, you know, there's some things that a man has to do by himself, like drinking in the morning or putting antifungal cream on your balls. And they apparently have both had this experience. Something has necessitated that they need to do this. I don't know if it was Lillian Pendergrass or what.
They've been to the memory lane. That's probably what started that whole antifungal cream need.
Mammary lane. Yeah, the poles at Mammary Lane. It makes you, you're going to need fungal cream on your balls. Ugh. Just, I don't even want to, that imagery is just bad. So Ash just needs a lift to the old smash-em-up derby. Ash reasons that the Delta is going there because that's where he first bones Lillian Pendergrass in the back of the Delta, which makes no sense whatsoever at all in any universe. So Chet breaks it down. Apparently he's a little bit of a savant here, and he's just like, he has it sussed, and he's like, okay, Brock got the Delta at the derby. It ran him over in a cry for help and then returned to the place where Brock originally got it. He goes, you know, I appreciate the cathartic symmetry of it all. And Ash is just kind of like, yeah, that could be it too, Chet. That's a possibility. So anyway, he says, I need to go do this by myself. All I need you to do is drive me there. And Chet agrees to it. And he says, what was my runner-up Metal Mike quote of the week? And he says, bless your soul, Chet, you drunk driving angel. So now we have a scene where Ruby and Kelly, armed and dangerous and looking pretty hot, the two of them with the guns and the leather and all that kind of stuff. It's you know, it's every young man's fantasy. Anyway, we'll move on. They go back to the crematorium for a showdown with Ruby Spawn. And then we get, that's just a quick little scene. I think Kelly says that this place smells like Ash's trailer. Just fucking disgusting. At the derby, Ash enters like Spartacus entering into the arena.
Yeah.
Did you guys, did you notice that too? The overhead shot, the coming into it and everything. And Em has some thoughts on this.
Oh, I imagine they're using the same studio.
It was a beautiful arena. You know what I mean? Like the whole background to the end of the episode was gorgeous.
So he had the Delta bleed onto the sand. I was like, blood and sand. And he was fighting it like, you know, Theocles. And the Delta even had the red headlights, which Theocles had red eyes.
Nice.
He needed Crixus helping him out.
I think
he had Pablo.
Yeah, he had tater tot when he needed Aggron. So you gotta go with the card you're dealt sometimes.
Yeah.
So as Em had mentioned, he sniffs and tastes some of the oil on the ground.
Ugh.
And the first one is just some, you know, shitty synthetic rice burner that probably
I didn't mention that.
Well, you said that the blood. Oh,
the actual blood.
Okay. So he sniffs and tastes the oil on the ground, and the first one he knows isn't the Delta because it's some crappy rice burner, which I can't imagine what kind of rice burner would be in a demolition derby.
Well, yeah, he said it was a synthetic oil. He's like, oh, yeah, gross.
Yeah.
So then he tastes the oil that has come from the Delta, and he knows she's close.
Which is disgusting.
Yeah.
Yeah, tasting oil.
He doesn't even spit. Yeah. He swallows.
No comment. So the scenes jump back and forth pretty quickly at this point. We're doing action on both ends of the spectrum here because you've got Ruby and Kelly feeling out their environment, and you've got Ash kind of seeing what's going on in this smash 'em up derby. So a creepy teen grabs Kelly by the pipes, or grabs Kelly into the pipes above her, and then the Delta makes its first couple of passes at Ash, fire bellowing from its underbelly. And at first, he's just kind of jumping out of the way and, you know, chucking and jiving and dodging and everything. But it's about to get nasty. So I like what Kelly does here. She pulls a gun from her Han Solo holster, and she blasts the creepy teen in the head several times. I don't know if she empties out the clip, because I don't think it was
She pops 15. It like 4 or 5 times, though.
Oh, it's more than that. It was at least 10. It was probably more, because I counted on the second or third time I watched. I was like, how many is that? It was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know,
nice.
Those damn things are resilient to be able to take, Even if it's not going to kill you, that should incapacitate you severely for a little while.
Yeah, for at least 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's at least that buys you a getaway, right?
Like, yeah.
But these are only going out by the Kandarian dagger. That's the rules. So Ash is taking cuts and stabs at the Delta as it passes gladiator style, or should I say Spartacus style. It's now bleeding oil. So like you said, it's blood on the sand.
See, I thought I actually saw blood coming out of the Delta. Did I see that incorrectly?
I don't know. It could be blood. It could be oil. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's got enough blood on it. Who knows?
Yeah. It could just be dripping from the paint job.
Yeah. We'll call it bloil.
So
compromise.
So at this point, because it's been injured by Ash and, you know, his Capua pleasing moves, that it unlocks the doors and Lacey and Pablo are able to get out and she runs for help. But Pablo is not so lucky and the Necronomicon decides to give him the face and he has to deal with it again, which he does by stabbing it repeatedly with a shard of glass, which he shouldn't have stopped.
No.
But I mean, would he have destroyed it?
I don't think he would have destroyed it, but
he would have shut it the fuck up, though.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
only the Kandarian dagger that can kill it, too, right?
Yeah. So maybe all that was a ruse. Maybe he really wasn't doing any damage, but he made it look that way.
You can burn the book if we're going by canon, because that's what happened in the first episode. Because he was able to throw the book into the fire. Not the first episode, I'm sorry, the first movie.
Yeah, but there was still Evil Dead 2.
Yeah, it does. I'm not saying it works, but the Kandarian dagger hasn't been able to finish it off either. The dagger works on its creations. Anything that comes through by the book can be killed or hurt by the dagger.
Which Ruby created the Necronomicon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's so
ho. She's the one who wields the Kandarian dagger.
But she has no interest in destroying the book, so I guess we're never going to know. Maybe we will at the final, you know, there's never going to be an end to this story. No,
you can't get rid of the Necronomicon, you can't get rid of Ash. It's
I hope not.
Come on now. Better not get rid of Luke Skywalker, fuckers.
Next movie, bud.
Shut your
done.
Mouth.
I don't know.
That's all right, he can be Ghost. I'll take Ghost Luke Skywalker all day. But as long as Mark Hamill's alive, you can't kill Luke Skywalker. Did you hear me, J.J. Abrams? I'm coming if you do.
One light for yes, two lights for no. All right, so as Ash is riding the Delta like a mechanical bull, the book tells Pablo, who is stabbing it with a shard of glass, as I had mentioned, that by casting it back to hell, he can live. And I'm assuming they also mean he can live without its influence. That's the deal that's on the table here. That's why I think it could be a double cross.
It's pretty vague.
I think this could be a clean cut. So the book then spits out its word for Pablo to read, which I thought was pretty funny. It just belches it out. And he's like, what's that? And he's like, it's my word. Like, so the Necronomicon has a word, you know, like...
Macaroni.
Not a promise.
Yeah, macaroni. Batoomch.
Amagi.
Amagi.
That's the word. Which it doesn't look like it says Amagi at all. But...
Fraggle.
Fraggle, yeah. Gobo.
So, Uncle Traveling Max. So Ash is taking advice from his dead dad about keeping his butt cheeks clenched and hard enough to crack a walnut on. And this is where M got her Metal Mike quote of the week, where he's just bouncing up and down. It's so ridiculous. He's bouncing up and down on the hood of the Delta saying, I'm hard, Dad. I'm hard. Words that no dad ever wants to hear.
No.
So Kelly and meanwhile, Kelly and Ruby work together beautifully to rid the world of her spawn. It was a nice action sequence. There's not too much to say about it, but they really teamed up to get these creepy kids done with. And I like the whole, you know, throwing of the dagger.
Yes, very chainsawish.
And you can tell that Ruby is hesitant to do it, but she does it. She doesn't want to, but she knows at this point she has to. So it's not any more of like, oh, my poor little kids. You know, all we get is a little bit, I brought you into this world, I can take you out kind of thing.
You're not really killing them. You're just sending them back to hell. So it's like, come on, what is she crying about?
Yeah, I guess you could see it that way. You're just destroying their physical form, but, you know, their deadite souls will live on.
They're purpley piles of shit.
So Ash puts the finishing moves on the Delta, which entails ramming his chainsaw through the hood into the engine, which I got some body work done on my car recently, and, you know, insurance paid for it, but it was like almost $2,000. I can't even begin to imagine what this would cost.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're going in and cutting hoses and all kinds of shit, man. I mean,
he hits those head gaskets or valves or any kind of, yeah.
The amount of money it would cost to fix the Delta, we could probably buy another one.
I know. How many Delta 88 parts can you find these days?
Well, that was, you'd have to find one off of one in a scrapyard, basically.
Yeah, well, not just that. I mean, a lot of those engines were pretty basic. You know what I mean? So other than like Bondo and bodywork, the engine really wouldn't be that bad. It's just an old, Buick, right?
It's an Oldsmobile.
Oldsmobile. So, yeah, it's an American car. Yeah. There's parts out there.
Sitting dry rotten in some warehouse somewhere.
Or in boxes still. Fuck. You know? You never know.
Pablo follows the Necronomicon's instructions, perhaps unwisely, to speak the word Amagi. The Delta rears up one last time, comes back down, and dies finally. I guess all the switches had been flipped.
Oh, yeah. It was time to die. Ball got what he wanted. He needed the car to stop moving.
Back to Ruby as she slits the throat of the last of her spawn, and then back to Pablo as he kind of talks about this a little bit with Ash, and he's like, hey, look, this is what I'm supposed to do. Do you think it's a good idea? And he's like, well, man, can't really get any worse, can it? It was just the stupidest question to ask under any circumstances by anybody ever, so I would totally expect it to come out of his mouth.
Exactly, and he should know better of, okay, that means definitely fucking not do what Ash wants to do. Like, okay, we'll keep it. You know, it's like, come on, man.
Which I think he said something along those lines last season when they were facing that one particular demon that was shifting in and out.
Yeah.
And Pablo actually argued with him, like, no, I think it could get better or worse. Or I can't remember what, something about paint, you know, some sort of analogy he had.
I seem to remember something about that, though.
Well, here's an idea. Maybe Ruby intentionally got her away from the guys because she would have maybe told him that that wasn't a good idea. Hmm. I mean, it's a long shot, but it's possible.
I don't see coming up on what I'm about to describe next. I don't know if she thinks that was a good idea because he throws it into the hell dimension.
Oh, that's
right. They shut the thing, and then instantly she looks like she's in pain. Yeah. Like all her wounds suddenly hurt more than they did before. And she's like, the Necronomicon, it's gone. We got to get moving. We got to go, you know, figure out what the hell these idiots did while we were gone.
She had the Obi-Wan. A million lives have been snuffed out all at once.
Yeah. So Ash and Pablo walk away from the Delta, and they share some friendly banter about getting the Delta fixed. And as they walk away, as they kind of fade off into the distance, Ball comes roaring out, and we fade to black.
Yeah, genius. It's a genius way to bring him in. Just
so I don't know if you saw the preview for the
next
episode.
No, I never get to see the preview.
Apparently, everybody who's currently in the cast, I'm not sure if Chet was in there, but everybody who's alive is going to be all in one room, and Ball is possessing somebody.
Sweet.
And he can move from body to body, so they don't know who it is. So,
it's going to get good.
Be a fun episode. But see, this is what leads me to believe that you can get some mileage out of episodes with him as a bad guy and Ruby as a kind of maybe Scorpius-style good guy without having to have the Necronomicon always be there.
For sure. But it's definitely not gone for good as well.
No, I wouldn't want it to be. I wouldn't want it to be. I think that would be lame because it all started because he had to read from that book and press the tape recorder, you know.
You remember the singing fish? It was like a bass, and it would sing. How great would it be if they had a Necronomicon version of that?
I would buy that. I would pay more money than I'm willing to admit right now
right?
on this podcast.
What?
We've talked about this before.
Oh, really? Oh, well, see, it's such a good idea. Yeah. We need to do
it. It's a good idea. It keeps coming up.
Yes.
We need to make
or
one.
Or puppet.
And it's been renewed for season 3, by the way.
Yeah.
Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Yeah.
We know what we're going to be doing this time next year. If nothing else, we know this.
Anything else you guys want to say before we go into feedback?
No, I think we can. We covered a lot.
I'm just putting it down now. I think that the tie between Pablo and the Necronomicon is severed, but I think it's going to be replaced by what Paul was saying, a tie with Ball somehow. I don't think he's not off the ropes
yet. You can't trust the Necronomiconian. Yeah.
Can't trust that damn Nami.
I know.
All right, so before we get into feedback, Paul has an announcement he would like to make.
Okay, so, you know, we've been kicking around the ideas of doing different things, not always a piece of pottery. You know, I've been dabbling in t-shirts lately, and we'll get a picture of it up. So this year, we're going to do the same thing as last year. Everybody who puts in a review on iTunes, because, I mean, I'm an iTunes whore. I want as many as we can get. It gives us, you know, it's the easiest thing you can do. It gives us notice. It puts us at the top of some lists, you know, if we can get enough of them. And it gives us fuel for doing it, because anytime we can read something, that kind of gives us, you know, a little extra motivation. So this year, it's going to be a t-shirt I designed recently. It says Dead Eye Bites podcast on it. There's a chainsaw, some blood. We'll have pictures of it on Facebook and Twitter. And then we'll just do the raffle drawing at the end, and whichever person we pull out, we'll get a t-shirt, and of course we'll ask you your size, and then we'll go from there.
And the back of it, towards the up top, towards the back collar, has the No Ship Network logo with the three fingerprints on it as well. So you can wear it around town, and when people ask you about that, you have a chance to tell them about one of your favorite shows and one of your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
It's a win-win.
Yes. One of a kind. One of a kind. Each one is hand done by me.
Yes, Em and I have a prototype each, and they're a little bit different from each other with the blood splatter. Each one is unique, so it really is a one of a kind thing.
Which, yeah. I've already got pictures, so I'll post those.
Awesome, fantastic, fantastic.
All right, so our first batch of feedback is going to be discussing last episode, because we released our podcast early last week.
Yes, cool.
Okay, and we're starting with Anthony Bassage. Hello, Anthony. And he says, hey, No Shippers. Love Raimi, Campbell, and company's take on Christine in this episode. The horror homages in this season have been beautiful. I never read the book, but I prefer this show's interpretation of the whole possessed car concept. I was never much fan of the movie Christine. How lovely was that effect of the kid's midsection getting torn out by that flying hubcap? Then, of course, there's that tire on skull scene. This show never disappoints. I have to say, I'm really disappointed that Ash's dad got killed off so fast, especially after he had just become a believer in Ash. I hoped he would have a deadite murdering team of Ash and Brock Williams, but I guess that was not in the cards. It would have been amazing, though. I do admit Brock's death was randomly fantastic and hilarious. My Metal Mike quote of the week is from Chet after being asked what goes into pink fuck. A pink fuck is a proprietary mix of liquors and spirits, garnished with orange rinds and nutmeg, oh, and a shit ton of ketamine. I just love lines that offer some crazy recipe for a drink or a meal. Oh, and Kelly goes on the same exact bender I would go on if somebody were to point to all the shortcomings of my life in a seemingly positive way. Really looking forward to your Westworld coverage.
Awesome. Thanks, Anthony.
Thanks for writing in, Anthony. I'm glad you liked this episode. I loved it. We all loved it.
Well, that was last week's episode, right?
Yeah.
Anthony,
yeah.
We appreciate you.
I don't, on the whole Christine thing, I watched the movie. I haven't read the book. I'm slowly going through all of Stephen King's books, and I'm going to read all of them eventually. The movie I saw, it has been ages and ages ago. Probably, you know, the first couple of years it was out on VHS or something like that. And I don't remember very much of it at all.
I only saw parts of it.
I do know that the Delta was cooler, but that's just me.
I like Maximum Overdrive for killing cars.
Oh my God.
That
is a creepy
movie.
That scared me so
bad.
It's probably cheesy. It's probably cheesy if we go back and watch it now.
I know it is.
I might watch it. I mean, it's got the, what, Green Goblin truck?
Mm-hmm.
Loved it.
Yeah. And Emilio Estevez.
Emilio.
And I was like, Emilio.
The first slumber party I ever went to, we watched that. It was
nice.
Terrifying.
And make you not want to go buy any machinery.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that fear carried over as much as like other movies, but
I was watching it.
It was frightening.
I was watching it at my aunt's house. My sister and I were there, and we'd rented it from the store, and you know, she had gave us ice cream and pizza or whatever. I think we were staying the night. We were really young, and we watched it. And I remember going into the bathroom, and they had this bathroom with, you know, some bathrooms have like that full length mirror that goes all the way across and stuff like that. You know, and the whole time I'm sitting there pissing, I'm thinking like that Green Goblin truck is just going to smash through. And I was seriously scared that this would happen.
Oh, yeah. Make you pee quick.
Pinch it off. Let's go.
All right. So we have another letter discussing the previous episode, Last Call. And this is from Metal Mike. And he says, some quick thoughts about episode 3. Car possession was great. I never thought I would see a better kill with a tire than the one in Tarantino's Death Proof. But my God, was I wrong. It was damn brutal. Creepy Ted and his creepy stories. Good laughs, and we got our one wrestling TV appearance of the season on the TV behind the bar. I have a feeling for one of the hosts it was one too many. Well, I blissfully was unaware of it. He goes on to say, the Lee Majors CGI face on the guy riding the bull was pretty funny too. It seemed weird that Pablo was standing in the background during the death of Ash's father, but he never made a move or anything. I realize it's a small nitpick from an editing standpoint, but I was thinking that maybe this was going to be a premonition of Pablo's until I watched the behind scenes and one of the guys made it a point to say this is the last time we will see Lee Majors as a living person. I remember that because I watched that too, and I thought he was going to come back as a deadite, like a really mangled one. But
I know.
But he's coming back as a ghost. He's Ben Kenobi. Metal Mike goes on to say, what could Ash's father know that could be so important? I think when Deadeye Cock comes back, we'll find out. I am sure they will taunt Ash with that information. Why wouldn't they? Yeah, maybe we'll get like some sort of communication like in his dreams like he had with Eli, or if he takes some sort of hallucination. Or I don't think they'll repeat that same device to get him there. But, you know, Eli revealed some things to him, you know, in that altered state. So maybe Ash will have something revealed to him via Brock in an altered state as well.
That'd be pretty cool.
You know, something that I've thought about now after watching this episode we just saw and seeing the preview for next week, Ball could be doing that, you know, because it's a pretty common thing for demons to taunt people by telling them things that they don't know or that they shouldn't know about their own past or whatever have you, things that the person who's being inhabited shouldn't know. So, you know, I could see Ball going into Sheriff Emery and saying some of this stuff and letting Ash in on the secret, and then he'll be like, what the hell? You know, because it's got to be something bad.
Mm-hmm.
So Metal Mike goes on to say, my Metal Mike quote of the week goes to Ash with, this is not about your mother's Jedha. I did not have time Sunday or Monday to watch episode 4 more than once, so all I got is my quote of the week. My Metal Mike quote of the week goes to Ash with Pennzoil Platinum. Hello, baby. Little overdue for a valve job. Metal Mike from NH. Dig it.
Dig it.
Digging it. Digging it. Faux show. Thanks for writing in.
Yeah,
and thanks,
Mike.
Thanks for everybody for being patient about you know, us. We had some stuff we had to do on Monday, scheduling conflictions, so we, you know, everybody's feedback, as you can see, we got to it. That's all I'm saying. We got to it.
We got to it.
And thanks for being patient.
All right, next up, we got Polearm. And he says, this may be, and now he's talking about the current episode, Driving Under the Influence. And he says, this may be my most favorite episode of this season. We had Kelly partnering up with Ruby, Pablo with the other girl having his own nightmare vision, and then Ash with his pal Chet. This is awesome. I loved how Chet just accepts Ash's supernatural explanation for everything. What I'm surprised is Kelly keeps bringing up Ruby's immortality, but she never brings up that apparently Ruby wrote the book. Why? How did she lose it in the first place? Also, the Necronomicon is messing with Pablo. Well, either the book or Ball is. Also, a one-word spell to open the portal? Where was that when Anne was trying to open up the portal to banish the evil in Evil Dead 2? And how did he read it? See you next week. And he's actually got another edition that he sent in. But do you want to comment on that before I move on to his PS?
How does he know to read it? It has to be something of the connection.
It's the Brujo connection, possibly. Maybe he has a way of interpreting things.
Could be, or it could be the connection that he has with the book that allows him to translate that and be like, oh, I see what that is. Because to me, it would just look like written in blood gibberish that I see all the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's also, I mean, Ball's probably whispering it in his head. You know?
Yeah.
Whispers. Being seductive.
Exactly. Tickling his fancy.
So Polearm goes on to say, didn't anyone think Ash's scream after his father's death was a little less than fulfilling in terms of volume and pain? That was an opportunity for a classic Evil Dead 2 scream, like when he cut off his hand, found the destroyed bridge, or screamed after his first possession. I think the death of your father would be worth at least that much. Maybe Bruce has gotten old and can't do those over-the-top screams of pain and madness anymore.
Oh, you got to figure Ash has lost everybody. It's not like he was the same guy he was in the cabin all those years ago. He says it in this episode, person after person after person after person. And then he had that long fight with his dad all those years, and that kind of desensitizes you to a lot of it. So, yeah, they could have gone a little over the top, but like M said earlier, he still has a mission to take care of because the car's still running and killing people. He's got to go help get the Necronomicon, and it's Ash. He's high on freaking pink fuck at the same time. He didn't have time to come down.
It's a good in-world explanation for that, because the only thing I could offer is that the series is a completely different tone than the movies. Mm-hmm. The movies are actually a lot more serious, especially the first Evil Dead, but even Evil Dead 2 has, you know, some depth of seriousness that you don't ever get in this series.
It was, yeah, because it was basically a serious movie that ventured off into comedy territory more and more and more as it went on, but it stayed a serious movie, and then you kind of have, you can even say the same thing about Army of Darkness, but it, at any rate, M's correct in that assessment. I believe that it's completely different tone, so that kind of really going for it dramatics just doesn't fit with it.
Yeah, I don't get the sense that everybody's really bringing their A game as far as acting, like everybody, and I'm okay with it because I realize this is just a campy, balls to the wall, ridiculous show that, you know, that is just entertaining and something to turn your brain off and watch and enjoy the great action. That's, I mean, all the, you know, effort is actually really going into humor, action, and gore.
I really don't know how an Ash versus Evil Dead series would have played out if they tried to play it more seriously. I think that would have been a mistake. This is the best way that they could have done it, because the tone does differ from all three movies. It's probably closest to like
Army.
Yeah. Because I think about like the Three Stooges stuff when he's fighting with his skeleton self, you know, and he's putting up the hands to stop the block to the face and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. Plus it seems like it's what they wanted to make, you know, so it's more fun for the actors and the writers and everybody all together, you know?
Mm-hmm. And at this point, everybody is a veteran of, you know, with the exception of some of the extras and, say, Pablo and Kelly, everybody's a veteran of the writing, acting, producing, directing scene that's going on here. So everybody's just kind of like, look, we've made our bones. People know who we are. We have our reputations. Let's make something that we fucking want to do and have, like you guys are saying, have a really good time with it. And that's, you know, when the audience knows that that's happening, we sense it and we love it for what it is.
I agree.
All right, our final piece of feedback comes from Undefeated Sam, and he's also commenting on this current episode, Driving Under Influence, and he says, I doubt that I got this in on time, but I'm going to hope for the best. Well, you
shows what you know.
And he says, man, I love you guys and this show. Lee Majors getting it caught me by surprise. It reminded me of an episode of this old-time radio show I listened to called The Whistler, in which a car starts off in a whole other area, and this guy robbing some place only to have his life taken by the car as if fated. Anyway, loads of ashy goodness and plenty of mayhem, but no heads-up asses with flaccid dead dick flapping in faces. God, I love this show. God, I love this show. Bring some more Sparta homies in.
I agree.
I think they'll show up. I mean, they film, you know, in New Zealand. So it is New Zealand, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They film in New Zealand. So, you know, I'd say the vast majority of people who are on that show were not extras from somewhere else. They were people from New Zealand. So,
all right. So who would you like to see most? Well, M, I already know you want Crixus. I mean, let's be for real, right?
I mean, there's a toss up. There's quite a few people I'd like to see. I like to see everybody.
Yeah. But if you had to choose one.
One.
Oh, that's tough, because I could probably keep, now that I'm thinking about it, I could keep coming up with little scenarios, like having Bodyatus be like a crotchety like gas station attendant out on the edge of town as they're leaving.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
How about Alethea?
Oh, of course. Duh.
Yeah. Oh, Alethea, she could be at Mammary Lane.
She's the owner.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, Crixus.
Yeah, because he could just punch him.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the Medicus. If we could get the Medicus to be in anything ever.
Oh, my God. He would fit right in with the Scooby Gang. He could be their doctor. Be amazing.
He could just live in the bathroom of the Airstream trailer and just come out. He's the one who makes them clean. Right. Because you know that they're all blood splattered and disgusting and nasty with gore and vomit all over them and everything. And shit, sometimes literally, and he could be the one who sponges them down and washes their clothes.
Vinegar.
Somebody's got to do that shit.
Vinegar
just
sticks
fresh
them.
And clean.
Any final thoughts before we sign off?